Good evening and welcome to Radio EduTalk. My name is David Noble in Dalgety Bay, and for the first time in a while since before the summer, delighted to have my co-host John Johnson back from his summer break. John's over in Glasgow. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, David.
Yep. Yeah, and if you're listening to the live show, we've got a very busy evening ahead of us. To start off with, we have delighted to welcome to the show Frances Besler, who's Programme Director of the Rights Respecting Schools Award, linked to UNICEF. And welcome to the show, Frances.
Thank you. Hello.
Okay. Now, we're going to hear from Frances all about Rights Respecting Schools Award and the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, etc. In a moment. I'll just say that, as ever, if you're listening to the live show, you can get in touch in two ways. First of all, you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk. That's edutalkr. If you've got any comments or questions for Frances, or if you're on Twitter, you can include the hashtag EduTalk, EduTalk, and we'll be able to pick that up sometime during the show. So just to start off, Frances, it'd be great to hear a bit more about what your work entails, and then if you could go into maybe just introducing the context for Rights Respecting Schools Award.
Okay. Well, I've worked for UNICEF for about 4 years now, working as the Programme Director for Rights Respecting Schools. And before that, I've been involved in education, so I'm an education person rather than a rights person. I started off being a secondary maths teacher and then went into sort of local authority work, and then worked with the government in England about improving maths in schools, and then got involved in, I mean, my real passion is about children doing as well as they possibly can at school, so sort of reducing gaps in attainment. And I've done a lot of work around looking at sort of data and teaching and learning. And so came into the UNICEF job really looking for how you can change the ethos of a school, so how you change the culture of a school to do the best for children everywhere. And my day-to-day bit probably isn't terribly – well, there's bits that are very exciting – but the day-to-day bit is sort of managing a programme. We've got a team of people who provide support to schools. Because it's an accredited award, we assess schools at different stages on their journey to become rights respecting. And I think probably the best bit of my work is going and visiting all the rights respecting schools across the whole of the UK. And seeing what they're doing to improve outcomes for children, and really, the sort of the aim of Rights Respecting Schools is to take the Convention on the Rights of the Child, which is a legal document, really, and to make it lived within a school context.
And you mentioned the UNCRC being a legal document, Frances, but could you just remind us about the kind of key tenets of that particular convention?
Well, it's a very, very young convention. I mean, we're saying it's the 25th anniversary this year on the 20th of November. I always put that into context. I'm giving my age away a bit, but I always put that into context of my eldest daughter is actually older than the convention, because people often sort of think, well, they don't really know very much about the convention. And part of the reason is that it is so new. It's an international treaty written and developed by sort of governments, and with the backing of all religious leaders at the time as well. It was actually led by Poland. They were the country that first sort of instigated it. And it's a human rights treaty that sets out all the rights that children have. There's sort of the particular focus on it, the sort of the general principles of the convention are that all children under the age of 18, so it goes up to their 18th birthday, have have the rights to be sort of, there's 42 rights, but the sort of the general principles are non-discrimination, so they apply equally to all children, whoever they are and whatever their sort of gender, race, sexuality, etc. Everything that adults, who are the duty bearers, everything that adults do should be in the best interests of the child. There's also a very strong principle around participation. There's a whole sort of cluster of articles about children really being involved in making decisions about whatever happens to them. So everything that is done in their best interests, you have to involve children participating, so that you can't do something in the best interests of a child without consulting them. And then the final one is that all children have the right to life, survival and development. And all the work on education, there's a couple of specific articles about education, fit within that principle of development as well.
Now, clearly, Francis, since this was written and agreed, as you say, 25 years ago, since then there have been clear implications for education establishments within the United Kingdom. So, you know, with that in mind, how did the Rights Respecting Schools Award come about? And then can you tell us how, again, maybe for somebody that's not, that's maybe heard about it but hasn't experienced it in practice, how does it operate?
Okay, I mean, one of the articles in the convention is specifically that UNICEF has a remit to provide expert advice and assistance on children's rights. So that's one of the things that UNICEF is actually tasked to do by the convention. When you look at the convention, even if you look at the sort of the full convention, because we often refer to summaries, you get a general picture about what is expected for, you know, that children have a right, have an entitlement to. And then the Committee on the Rights of the Child, they go and look at what different countries are doing and then bring out what they call a general comment on what that means in practice. And the general comment on education actually happened to be the first one that they did, so sort of nearly 25 years ago, and it gives really, really clear stance on what education should be like for children, particularly that it should be child-centered, and it should be provided in a way that respects the dignity of the child and enables them to express their views and participate in a way that respects to respects their involvement in everything that affects them in school. Now, I think the Rights Respecting Schools started up as a development of UNICEF. UNICEF education officers, as they were called, then used to go into schools and do sort of assemblies or workshops with classes to try and inform people about the convention, and realised after a while of doing this, so we reviewed the practice, that actually that wasn't good enough. And so what we did, or actually, I mean, it predates me. I wasn't there, so it's not my great idea. I was just very lucky to have inherited it. what people then did was think, well, okay, there's lots of things like eco schools and healthy schools, and why don't we set up an award for a school to demonstrate that they're really embedding the rights of the child into school life? And so it developed from there. And what we ask schools to do is to sort of sign up and register, and then they start working towards the standards. We've got four standards. The first one is around leadership and management, so that you say that rights-respecting values underpin leadership and management, so it will be in the school improvement plan and things like that. The second standard is about learning about the convention. The third one is about the ethos of the school, that it's a rights-respecting school. And then the fourth standard is about participation. And we have lots and lots of guidance that's available for schools once they've signed up to support them so that we can, because we've got lots of schools doing it now. I mean, we've got over 3,200 across the whole of the UK. Scotland is our leading sort of country in terms of the four nations of the UK. And it's got nearly 1,000 schools that have signed up for rights respecting. And what people do is through assessment visits and through support visits, we pick up really good bits of good practice and then share them more widely with other schools.
That's great, Frances. What I'll say at this moment in time is that if you're listening to the live show or indeed the podcast, you can actually access a couple of reflective questions that Frances has kindly posed. Might be for yourself as a practitioner or for your own department or school. And you've also posted some links. So this kind of it's a Word document that you can download, and you can get that from just visiting edutalk.cc/upcoming. You'll notice a link next to Frances's name on that particular website. So that's edutalk.cc/upcoming. That's if you're listening to a live show just now. You can open that up just now while you're listening to Frances. If you're listening to the podcast, then if you just go to edutalk.cc, you'll be able to see that's where you'll have gone to access Frances's audio, and all the key links will be there. So you've got links to the Rights Respecting School Awards website, to the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and a good practice review. And we're going to come on to hear maybe a couple of examples of good practice of Rights Respecting Schools Award in the UK. And just before Frances comes back in, her two reflective questions this evening. First of all, Frances poses this: the aim of UNICEF's UK programmes is to improve outcomes for children in the UK. How far is Rights Respecting Schools Award contributing to that, and what more should we do? And secondly, we describe becoming a rights-respecting school as a journey. How do we deepen children's and staff's knowledge and understanding of rights, moving them on sensitively from where they are? So we may get some response in the next 15 minutes or so of tonight's show, Frances. So it'll be interesting to see what people think. Just moving on, could you maybe give us some examples of practice in schools, maybe at various stages in the journey, that has particularly interested you and you feel we might benefit from?
I think you've mentioned the link to the Good Practice Guide. I mean, we've got that. That's, I think, our strongest collection, where people can have a quick look at ideas that schools have tried. We have a disproportionate number of good schools who've often already got a rights-respecting ethos. They might also be quite good on participation, with lots of opportunities like pupil councils and various sort of working groups. I think the participation bit is something that that schools tend to find makes the biggest difference most quickly. So we recommend that when schools start on the rights respecting school journey, that they set up a steering group, which is made up of children as well as adults, and the children actually take a lead on what they're doing. And often they have really, really good ideas about teaching other children and other adults about rights. We've got lots of examples of where the steering group has gone on and played games with different groups of children, or made up their own games, or have taught teachers about rights, or have made plays about rights, or done debating. Because sometimes, I think to some degree, one of the first steps you've got to do to become a rights respecting school is you've got to actually know what the convention says and what it means. So you've got to know about the principles, you've got to know about the articles. And it tends to be that schools find the most effective practice is sort of a drip-drip approach. I mean, lots of schools talk about rights in assemblies, They have a rite of the month, so they'll sort of introduce it in an assembly, and then they'll talk about it in lesson time or in times when they're in sort of tutor group time. There might be explicit areas in the curriculum when they teach about rites, both as a standalone lesson and then sometimes as part of the curriculum. Schools in Scotland have found that the interdisciplinary learning has been really, really good for that having a rite as an overarching focus has been really good to support the interdisciplinary learning. But that's been schools when they've been quite a long way down the journey. I mean, the first thing is about getting it started, getting it going, and people knowing about the rites and things. I mean, we do have sort of various resources like Wants and Needs, which schools always tell me work really, really well for teaching about rights. When children have to identify what the difference is between a want and a need. So, you know, you might want an ice cream, but you actually need proper food and things like that.
Yeah, that's great. And it was a particularly interesting workshop that I was involved in. My school were very early in the journey, and it's maybe something I'm coming on to in a moment, that at certain points we've felt a little bit stuck along the journey. And I would imagine from what you're saying, you really need to have management involved in some way, possibly not leading it across the school, but in terms of the steering groups and such like, you have to have key personnel in place. It can't just be one person's baby with a risk that they might move on to a different post.
Absolutely not. It will not work unless the senior leadership team or the head teacher is fully committed to it. Because what you're doing is you are implementing a program that's going to go across the whole school. And you can't do that unless the senior leadership is absolutely fully behind it. I mean, perversely, we have a registration charge, and it's actually been very positive because those schools that have registered and paid, I mean, it's £200, which is, you know, a low, you know, it covers costs. It's not trying to make money or anything. So it covers costs for admin support and all the central support. And since we've had that, we've found that schools have made better progress because it is the senior leadership team or the head teacher that's holding the money. You can't sign off £200 if you're a class teacher. And that has actually helped that level of engagement to improve. I know that sounds particularly ruthless, but it has made a big difference.
No, I totally get that, Frances. but you know, the early stages, you know, getting the kind of commitment in place to move through. I do forget the actual phrase that shows that you're serious as a school. What kind of interesting ways have schools actually gone about getting started? How do they kind of get that initial high impact?
Schools are so different. So some schools decide that they're going to do it as a big launch, and they'll have a big assembly and they'll invite their parents in and they'll sort of say, right, we're doing rights respecting schools, and they'll do an assembly about rights or a bit about UNICEF or a bit about the convention. So that's one way of doing it, sort of the big bang. The other way of doing it is to say, okay, these are some key staff who are going to be interested and committed to this. We're going to get them involved first and get them to start doing some of these rights activities with their classes. And then they're going to be our sort of champions within the school and spread it more widely across different areas of the school. At some stage, you do need to, you know, you do need to launch it and things, but you can do it in sort of different approaches. And I think it varies sometimes between whether you're a primary school or a secondary school about which approach you take.
Yeah. And I suppose at the other end, Frances, is ensuring sustainability. I think, you know, when you've got awards and different levels of the awards, there's that kind of unbuilt motivation. You've mentioned about it being a priority with senior management and their active involvement and such like. But, you know, how are schools, or how do you help schools to stay focused along the journey when other things can get in the way, and also when they get to the latter stages of the ward, what keeps them going?
I think it is a serious commitment becoming a rights respecting school. I mean, it takes probably 3 to 4 years to become fully rights respecting. So we break the journey into stages. So you've got your recognition of commitment, which is an electronic stage where you submit your action plan by email to your professional advisor. And a lot of schools tend to be very slow in doing that, and they're sometimes practically at level one and ready for assessing before doing that. So I'm just making a little plug for that. You've got your action plan, send it off.
Absolutely.
So you've then got your level one, which is a stage along the journey, really. And it's sort of, yes, you're doing really well. You've got really good pockets of excellent practice, but there's other areas that you might be needing to develop. And then I think we've got the idea of it being a staged journey over to our schools now. And the vast majority of them carry on to level two to become fully rights respecting when everything is really embedded. I think once they've been doing it for a year or so, probably 2 years, they can actually see the difference that it makes and see how everything else that they do fits in to being a rights respecting school. Because we're not saying it's about doing something additional. I think, to be honest, you have to do some additional things to start with. But once you get into it, it's the way you think about what you're doing. So it's a sort of the lens you look through is different, rather than it being an add-on with all sorts of additional things. To keep the sustainability going, we have, after you've achieved level two, we do expect schools to be reaccredited in the next three, after they've been level two for 3 years. So we make sure that they keep it focused. We also involve our level two schools where we can, in supporting us and trying things out for us. And particularly in Scotland, some of the heads or the deputies from level two schools assess level one schools, which is really good professional development. And you're going out and seeing different schools and coming back with new ideas, which again keeps it alive.
And forgive me if I've got this wrong, but am I right in saying that there's the possibility of young people from succeeding schools actually going and being involved with other schools?
That is the practice in some local authorities. It doesn't work everywhere because of the geography, and sometimes you're assessing a school that's a long way away.
Mm-hmm.
We call them peer assessors. So they tend to sort of, I mean, children have very, very strong views about whether something's up to the right standard or not, and are probably harder to convince than teachers, actually. So the young people are very good about talking to the other young people in the school or going out and seeing what's going on in the playground and things like that. They're not full assessors, though,
yeah.
Because, again, we have to write a report. We've got very clear criteria against which we assess, some of which are a bit trickier for young people to do, but they provide a really good additional sort of feel. And if they say, well, I really don't think it's rights respecting because this, that and the other was going on in the playground, the adult assessor would take note of that, mm-hmm, and ask the school maybe to wait a little bit longer.
Now we're just coming into the last couple of minutes of tonight's show, and I'll just remind listeners to the live show, or indeed the podcast, because we can pass on comments and questions to you after the show. But you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, just include the hashtag edutalk. Just finally, you mentioned about interdisciplinary learning, and I think the Rights Respecting Schools Award website is fantastic. There's so many curriculum support materials in there. So which particular resources are are proving popular. And can you maybe mention one or two approaches or projects that, that schools have used that have worked well to embed Rights Respecting Schools Award within everyday classwork?
Right, that's a tricky question. I think one of our absolutely best resources is a teaching pack for secondary schools called Seen and Heard, which was actually developed by the steering group in a school in West Lothian. So the steering group found out that they used another of our resources called Just Living, which is free and downloadable. And they were absolutely shocked by the number of children that are living in poverty across the UK. And particularly they looked at in their local environment, in their local community. And they a boy who was in S1 volunteered to be filmed because he'd just been made homeless, so was you know, really felt that he knew what he was talking about living in poverty. So we have this fantastic video and lesson plans about, you know, written from a young person's point of view. There's a song that goes with it. I mean, we have a lot of songs that people have written, and that's obviously a good way of sort of resourcing. But Seen and Heard, I think, is really, really good for secondary schools because it's something that crosses quite a lot of different curriculum areas. Because we're a UK programme, we don't tend to say specifically you must do this or you must do that, because all the different curriculum are slightly different. So we tend to sort of share bits of good practice across different areas. But certainly, I was in a school recently, I was trying to think they've done a big art and English project around Burns and had linked it all to the article about respecting children, respecting your culture. And so that was sort of the overarching theme, and then they pulled the other bits into it as well.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. Well, Frances, time's got the better of us this evening. It's been absolutely brilliant hearing about Rights Respecting Schools Award in the context of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. I would say personally that I just find the website a treasure trove of great resources, and as someone who's, you know, helping to steer my own school towards level one, I would also say that I'm well aware that there are many excellent training programmes and seminars, etc., that are in the pipeline. I think there's quite a few running in Scotland over the coming weeks and months, so that's definitely worth looking out for. And as I say, I just redirect everybody back to the links that will be on the EdgeTalk website to all the key resources. So thank you so much.
One thing is that if people need support or want help, or like you were saying, you were getting stuck, we really are there to help. So if people email the rrsa@unicef.org.uk, which is highlighted throughout the website, we will help you make progress, because we want schools to be rights respecting, because it makes a big difference for children.
Frances, thank you so much for joining us on EdgeTalk, and best wishes.
Okay, thank you very much for having me.